Patriarchy is a deviously clever system.
Being a boy comes with a certain set of rules. How do you be one of the boys?
Crying was very looked down upon.
And your father was?
My father was front and center with that, yes.
What's happening right now is an opportunity for men to be human.
If manhood is threatened, violence is imminent.
It is deeply empowering to be angry because there's things to be angry at.
Any move toward democracy, which is toward equality, becomes a threat to manhood.
Who the fuck do you think you are?
Nobody. I'm nobody.
One man told me this horrifying story. I'll tell it to you. He was a hockey dad, and he was at a hockey game, and this boy did okay, not great, and this father was excoriating him full voice in front of 100 people, 200 people in the audience, screaming at him. And the son started to cry, and he started screaming at him for crying. And this man observed this boy, maybe 13, 14, goes up into the stands where his mother is sitting. He sits next to his mother, still in tears. The mother reaches out an arm to comfort him, and he punches the mother in the face. That's the transmission of patriarchy. A big preoccupation throughout my life has been male power. What is healthy male power? I've never seen it.
I don't get angry at somebody that's outside me.
Yeah.
Until I've already completely shredded myself inside, and I've got nothing left to work on inside. So I
you eat it and eat it and eat it, and then
until battery acid comes flowing out.
Yeah, one day your partner says something that strikes you the wrong way, and it all comes out.
Yeah. So I think what I'm after here today, because I'm still thrashing myself about my inability to work in the world with other adults.
Why don't we start with you learning how to not thrash yourself so much? Let's take a little detour. How many men in this group give themselves a really hard time? And how violent is a really hard time?
Oh, God.
Most men have terrible relationships to themselves. They're more violent to themselves than they are to other people. We judge ourselves based on performance, other people's opinions, what we have. That's outside in self-esteem. Men in particular rely on performance-based esteem. I mean, we talk about the fragile male ego. Well, this is what it is. It's fragile because there's no internal sense of self-worth. It's all based on how well you do, you know, this particular day. And how well you did yesterday doesn't much count.
I think the anger comes to me two different ways. When I'm feeling cornered, Right. I have to do something. Right. Life is demanding a reaction, and I'm feeling, when I'm feeling traumatized and that's in that moment, I'm feeling a sense of I don't know what to do.
Yeah, get me from that to the rage or the anger.
I think it's rage at being put in that position.
Okay.
Sort of feeling like, you know, this is not my doing or responsibility, but I'm the one who has to deal with this. You feel shame for not being able to get yourself out of it in a, quote, normal way. You know, I think anger definitely kicks in at myself for not being one of those people who, you know, grew up not traumatized or just grew up and, I don't know, figured out some a better outlet for their trauma.
Trauma wasn't your fault, though.
Yeah.
But you take it on as shame. Okay. Yeah, I feel that. Let the sadness wash over you. Won't hurt you.
I think I always feel like the sadness is going to hurt me, or it does hurt me.
Listen, feelings will not hurt you. Running from feelings can kill you. It is part of the essence of traditional masculinity that you can run from shame, helplessness, powerlessness, into grandiosity, better than, superiority, dominance, and revenge. And I think this is the root of male violence. You hurt me, I get to hit you twice as hard back. All perpetrators see themselves as angry victims even while they're lashing out.
When I get into my anger and raging, it's always felt very uncontrollable to me.
Yeah.
And maybe not where I can totally control it, but I would like to know there's a hope that there's a path to go down where at some point I would be able to master that.
Okay.
And the second prong to that is that since I was very young, I'd really pushed down my ability to express sadness. And I can know that I'm sad, but very much struggle to actually express it from my body.
You know, there's a connection.
I don't doubt that one bit.
There's a connection between you shutting down on the soft feelings and being super expressive on the hard feelings.
Yes. That makes perfect sense.
You know, for 50 years, feminist psychologists have correctly identified that the healing move for most girls and women is re-empowerment, finding their voice. And the wound is disempowerment, never having a voice or losing it. The wound for boys and men comes much earlier than girls. It's about 3, 4, 5 years old. And the wound is about disconnection. We teach them to disconnect from their feelings. We teach them to disconnect from vulnerability. We teach them to disconnect from other people. We call that being independent. It's a particular trauma that men learn to escape by moving from shame to grandiosity. Grandiosity is driving so much of what's difficult in men. Grandiosity itself is a consequence of trauma, that men did not ask for it, that little boy did not ask for it.
Et toi, qu'est-ce que tu fais?
Moi je suis un rockstar et je fais de la guitare. Miaou miaou.
There are at least two truths about boys that we tend to overlook or underestimate. And the first is that boys have relational capabilities. The other truth about boys is that they're vulnerable. And of course, when we sit back and think about it, we know these things. But we still tend not to acknowledge them or value them in boys to the point where vulnerability or relational capabilities, boys, they may recognize those things in themselves, but they know they shouldn't show other people. They know it's considered a feminine weakness. They know it's a liability. They might be seen as soft boys or sensitive boys. In fact, even adults, most adults can think of, oh yeah, I know a boy like that who really cares about other people, who's so sweet and really kind and very gentle. But they'll always refer to those boys as being the exceptions.
And grades and fracture water, da-da-da-da, practices.
One of the things that kind of motivates boys to conform to group and cultural norms is exactly this desire to identify with and relate to the other boys. It's not that they hear that there's this need to prove masculinity and they do it in some abstract sense out of obligation. It's that they're trying to connect. For instance, at this particular school, the boys had created a club called the Mean Team. And it was created by the boys, for the boys, for the expressed purpose of acting against the girls. It was also meant to help them define themselves in opposition to the girls. And so in the beginning, they wanted to call it the good team. But then they realized, wait, the girls are good. The girls are good and nice. So we have to, if we're boys, be the opposite of the girls. So then it was either the bad team or the mean team. And the bad team just wasn't really something that they wanted to be called. When I asked them, also, what does the mean team do? Like, what's mean? Like, they said, like, oh, so if they're playing a game or something, we might come by and try to disturb it, like, say, talk during their game or something. It was never, calming physical harm. Sometimes the girls would chase them, and then they would get scared. But it got complicated because the mean team created a hierarchy among the boys, so there was a boss of the mean team. Interviewed Rob, who was not the boss of the mean team, he would say that Mike, the boss, he's the boss, so he gets to decide what to do, and we have to do it. And I said, well, what if you don't want to do it? He goes, I do it anyway. And at one point, Rob does think, well, I don't always want to do what the other boys are doing. And so he had this dilemma where he wanted to break away from the mean team, but he was worried that if he tried to, then all of the boys would gang up and just come after him. Another boy, Jake, confided in me. He said, well, actually, I'm friends with all of the girls, but the mean team is not supposed to associate with the girls. This one boy displeased Mike, the boss. And so he says, you're fired from the mean team. You're on the nice team. You're a girl. Gender socialization involves and results in disconnections. They feel like I have all these feelings and there's nowhere for these feelings to go. And the fact that I even have them makes me an anomaly. That they have to disconnect from parts of themselves, that they can't be fully present and genuinely engaged, then nobody will know them. This is this path to loneliness.
All right, so I can just show you, this is part of what sparked our interest in homophobic epithets on Twitter. If you look at this No Homophobes website, it traces the prevalence of homophobic insults over time. So if you look right here, you can see that faggot has been used over 41 million times since 2012. No homo, 15 million, so gay, 13, and dyke, 8. So when my co-author and I, Sarah Diefendorf, first started looking at this insult of no homo in online spaces, specifically on Twitter, we expected to find much what I saw offline with teenage boys, which is that they were being incredibly aggressive with one another and they were putting each other down. And so we gathered a bunch of these examples of the use of no homo, and what we found was something quite different. Almost across the board, the emotion that was expressed was a positive emotion, which is not what you would expect. Expressions of love, of liking things, of friendship, of missing one another. We saw was really this quandary that young men are experiencing when it comes to masculinity. They have these expressions of devotion and love and care and even liking things that they want to express. So the insult of no homo ironically allows them to be more authentically themselves, but it also reinforces a particular meaning of masculinity, which suggests that, you know, real men wouldn't say this, right? Only gay men would say something like this.
Popularity, what is it made of?
So I spent a year and a half in a public high school in Northern California investigating how boys came to think of themselves and others as men. And I had a very jarring experience when I entered into this school. Just walking down the hallway, I would hear, "Fag, faggot, you're a fag, you're a faggot," everywhere. One boy told me that, quote, anything, literally anything, could get you called a fag. If you turn a wrench the wrong way or something, dude, you're a fag. Even if a piece of meat drops out of your sandwich.
Boy, you sure make it sound easy. How do you do it?
Practice, my boy. Experience.
One boy told me this really interesting story, for instance, about how he had seen the movie Say Anything, and he had seen the character in this movie standing outside of his crush's window holding a music player above his head, playing, you know, Peter Gabriel's song. And he said that was his dream, to be able to do that outside of a girl's room. And when he shared that with his friends, they immediately started making fun of him for being gay, right? Even though what he was doing was heterosexual, he was doing heterosexuality in the wrong way. So boys work very, very hard to achieve a masculine identity, but that identity is constantly under threat. Right? So if they're not dominant, if they're not heterosexual the right way, if they're touching someone the wrong way, if they're not competent, that masculine identity can be taken from them. And that sends a very important message to young men and to young women, but to young men about their worth.
Club in 2004, there were very few spaces that I saw people focusing on what the young men's needs were. They think that they become a man when they can get a license or they're 21, they can drink. But we have this like teenage years where you're like trying to figure it out. So we got boys walking around, have no purpose, have no value system around, here's my role as a man in this community. Because I'm still a teenager. I'm not a little boy and I'm not a man, I'm a teen, I'm a young man. So what is my role? Oh, nothing, just to figure it out when I become a man. That's dangerous to have millions of teenage boys with no purpose except to wait for manhood to then get serious about life.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome.
There's very little happening, I think, in most of these schools that are helping students that have been in trouble to say, how do you come back? How do you go through this challenging life situation and then restore yourself back, right? We just say, okay, well, you're there for now, however long you need to be there. I believe we got to do some work around that. I think we got to do some healing work.
So on the left side, it says front of mask. So we're going to just, on the left side, we're going to draw a mask. And so where it says front of mask, please draw a mask, okay? On the same side where you drew the mask, I want you to write three words or three phrases that are qualities of yourself that you gladly let the world see. So what are qualities of yourself or characteristics of yourself that when you head out of your house to go see the world, what are three things you gladly let people see? And now we're gonna move to the back of the mask. The back of the mask are things we normally don't let people see, we normally don't talk about. And I want you to write those where it says back of mask. If we don't give men and boys, starting with boys, these tools to say, I'm hurting in a healthy way, then we're gonna keep losing them, I believe. And that's what we keep seeing. Let's do this one. This is a question. It says, are you holding on to something that you need to let go of? Let's just say that question doesn't resonate with. When have you felt most alone?
Like I used to hear people say when I was young, like, you know, it's not a day that go by that I don't think about this particular person. And I used to swear up and down that they would be lying. Like, nah, that's not true. Cause you know, you've experienced some type of death in your lifetime as just going, experiencing life. You gonna know somebody who's passed away, but it just don't hit you the same. After my brother passed, I got real depressed and then I lost everything. Like I lost everything, my place to stay, my car, everything. And then I became the person who was in a position to need, and not many people helped me out. Every day I wake up, like I have a flood of emotions that just go, like memories just like flashing through my head, and like it automatically like makes me sad. So I gotta like break that. Like every morning I wake up and I like gotta break this little cycle of like me feeling like just F everything, and then like getting up and having to go like still put on this mask, still put on this face, still be this person who everybody knows is being positive with Renzo. Everybody wants, like, you know what I'm saying? So I'm really dreading the 28th. It's that's the day. And it's just been on my mind like constantly, constantly, constantly. So like feeling like I want to just like be angry, and then feeling like I want to just stay in facilitator mode and just, you know, be cool. It's a battle. So.
Well, let me just say, you're not a facilitator right now.
No, I know. It's just a battle. It's a mental battle.
So you're not a facilitator right now. You're not working right now. You are in an opportunity to receive right now.
I'm not used to that.
So there's no time, you don't have to wait for a special occasion, just so you know. We have to like sometimes craft those situations for ourselves. Maybe it means going to the beach and digging a hole. Maybe it means going into the woods and hitting some trees with sticks. Like maybe it means taking a piece of paper and with some markers and like I don't know, it just requires us to like, so we need to sometimes create that experience for ourselves, and sometimes we just need to ask for it.
I felt alone when I got expelled. No one believed in me. Not too much I can say, young.
Thank you. That was beautifully said. Thank you. What's happening right now is an opportunity for men to be human and to say, hey, in all of my imperfection, all of my uniqueness, I sometimes don't feel like I'm everything I really want to be, but I can take everything I got and help elevate it today. I think that's what I think they want. I think that what I felt in that space is that we could do this every week for an hour, and it would be so powerful for us.
時にその他者がやっぱり自分の中にいないっていう言い方なかなか伝わりにくいかもしれないんですけどっていう感じがあって、そのやっぱ孤独って物理的に孤独なわけではなくて、関係としてその自分の周りにいるで相手としては自分と関係してるっていうふうには思ってるけれども、こっちとしては相手と関係してるというよりは、相手からはこのように思われているんじゃないかという自分の想像と関係してるっていう感じだから、生身のその人間と関係してるんじゃなくて、想像している相手との関係を関係と思ってる。でも実際は生身ではないので非常に孤独。
でもその問題ってね、ちょっと難しいのは、男性性なんだろうかっていうのがあって、つまりそれは若い世代 の孤独っていう可能性はないのかっていうね、うん、日本のよく中高年以上の人たちが、うん、家に帰ってきて、うん、でそれをいちいちお茶入れてくれって言わなくても、うん、ちょうどいい温度でちょうどいいタイミングでお茶を出してほしい、うん、っていう感覚って割と古い世代の人たちでしょ、うんうん、その何も言わなくても、うん、なんかしてくれる。
本当に。
そうそうそう。
それは若くてもあるし、家庭内のそういうのだけじゃなくて、友達同士とか職場でもあるし、確認をしないし、確認をしないでもやっぱ分かってくれるだろうとか、いうのはいろんなシチュエーションで。
そうね。そうね。
そのこととその上の世代の人たちがそのお茶が出てくるとかなんとかね、そういうので相手の気持ちとかは確認しないってこともね、今ちょっとゆいちゃん言ってたと思うんだけど、そのことはつながるのか、それはたまたま似ているだけで、
あ、そうそうそうそうそう、だからそれはその若い人の例だとしたら、そのそれが自分の心配が杞憂とかね、そのも分かるんだけど、
怖かったら確認すればいいけれども、うん、それがなんでできないかっていうと、やっぱり弱いなん、下に下るんだよね、やっぱりその上下っていうのかな、そのこう何か誰かに助けを求めるとかになった時もその人の下につくっていうやっぱ感覚があって、
うん、
でその弱みを見したとかっていう感覚だから、
うん、
そのそうなんで、ね、あのね、並列での関係でいられないんですよ、うん、上か下かでしか見れない、うん、
still face experiment, what the mother did was she sits down and she's playing with her baby who's about a year of age.
I'm my girl.
This baby starts pointing at different places in the world, and the mother's trying to engage her and play with her. And then we ask the mother to not respond to the baby. The baby very quickly picks up on this. And then she uses all of her abilities to try and get the mother back. She smiles at the mother. She points because she's used to the mother looking where she points.
Yeah.
The baby puts both hands up in front of her and says, "What's happening here?" She makes that screechy sound at the mother, like, "Come on. Why aren't we doing this?" Even in this 2 minutes, when they don't get the normal reaction, they react with negative emotions, they turn away, they feel the stress of it, they actually may lose control of their posture because of the stress that they're experiencing.
Okay. I'm here.
Relationships depend on the ability to repair the inevitable ruptures that occur. When you lose touch, how do you get back in touch with somebody? What patriarchy does is, in the name of manhood, in the name of being a real boy or one of the boys, when a boy starts to register the loss of connection, like that one-year-old baby, oh my God, I've lost touch, and starts to have the feelings of the loss, a voice comes in and says, "Are you a baby? You don't need that relationship."
Hier können wir das raus.
Ja.
Aber Philipp, du musst schon. Philipp, aber ihr müsst schon zusammenarbeiten.
Kannst so it shames the registering of the feeling of losing connection. And therefore, the ability to act on those feelings and to restore the connection.
Das hat Adrian gemacht. musst du nicht traurig sein.
So it makes the break in relationship irreparable.
Kannst du wieder neu machen.
Once you interrupt or you impede human relational capacities, you set the stage for any form of oppression. Patriarchy, it undercuts what's essential for democracy. Democracy rests on a premise of equal voice. Because if you don't have equal voice, you can't resolve conflicts in relationship. You are dependent on use of force, who has more strength. The person on the bottom can't have a voice that is deemed worth listening to because you can't listen to that voice and keep doing what you're doing. Then the person on top doesn't feel the feelings of the person on the bottom, which you can see in this society right now all the time. So what we're saying is, you have a psychology that's maintaining a politics, and a politics that's dependent on a psychology. And the other thing is, if you premise manhood or masculinity on the gender binary, it means to be a man means not to be a woman or like a woman, and to be in the superior position. So any move toward democracy, which is toward equality, becomes a threat to manhood. And that's what you see now. I mean, that's what's playing out. Manhood is threatened, violence is imminent.
It is a mental disorder. These are young men.
This is your town, you.
These are actual men.
Have to figure out, which is how to make the change without, in the process, shaming manhood, which will provoke violence. And it's like figuring out how to make that move without it triggering the reinstitution of the patriarchal structure.
When I saw as a child an 18 or 19 year old Israeli soldier a few years older than me yelling and shouting and insulting my father, and my father couldn't respond because if he responded he would probably be treated even worse, maybe even physically beaten up, then what does that create for me looking into this role model of a man and saying, wow, he can't do anything about this? What does that do to me as a young boy? And how that even traumatized me in saying, is this the man I'm supposed to look up to? And I know in his silence, he was protecting me and protecting himself. But this is the complexity of this patriarchal system, this expectation that men stand up for their rights and stand up for protecting their children and others, when in reality, they're not able to do that within that system. We see this every day as Palestinians. Every morning at 3 a.m., Palestinian men thousands of them every day being humiliated, standing in this sort of slaughterhouse with their heads down in obedience to that system of oppression, just so that they would be able to work for that day and to bring enough money to buy bread for their families. There is a humiliation that these people experience that can only be manifested in violence, either internally, where they feel they're not man enough, they're not good enough, and as an outer expression towards their wives, towards their daughters, even towards their sons. It's a masculine occupation that demasculinizes an entire community. Especially when we talk about political energies, for me, these are masculine energies that are in this conflict. How men relate to each other, how political entities relate to each other. From what I experience and see, the way men relate to each other is a lot of doubt. We have friends, you know, we call them friends, and these are the men we hang out with or we go bowling with. But to say, like, you have intimate relationships between men, it's very rare to see. And this is because men are afraid of each other. How men relate to each other, there is mistrust and fear. How men relate to women, there is mistrust and fear. And the only way to express any form of relationship with the other is in how it relates to power and domination. This is exactly what becomes manifested at the political level as well. Palestinians and Israelis in their political identities, we don't trust each other. It's all about who has more power than the other, who presents a better argument than the other, who has control over the other. This is the patriarchal system that I think both men and women are entrapped in. What I would need for my own healing in terms of my relationship with women is actually the feeling that I'm trusted. I think it's very important for us as men to really understand that we have been in the domination for thousands of years. So it's not about what I need to, you know, to keep myself or to protect myself. I think for me to be completely trusted and vulnerable in the eyes of a woman and hopefully not be judged, not be condemned, not to be seen as less manly because I am vulnerable, I think is what helps me create myself and transform myself to becoming this new human being.
בעצם איזשהו ציווי של איך אנחנו צריכים להנחיח את הגבריות שלנו בעולם. פגיעות זה משהו שנתפס כלא גברי. ברגע שזה לא גברי, והטרגדיה בעיניי שהיכולת שלנו לכונן את הגבריות היא בעיקר דרך מיניות. וזו דרמה. אישה שהיא נפגעת, היא לא תשאל את עצמה אם היא אישה. כי מגיל מאוד מאוד צעיר יודעת שיש סיכוי מאוד מאוד סביר שבשל היותה אישה, היא תיפגע או תוטרד מינית. בנים לא לומדים את זה. לא לומדים אותנו להיזהר מפגיעות מיניות. אנחנו לא אמורים להיפגע, ולכן כשזה כבר קורה, זה מנוגד לחלוטין לכל התפיסות שלנו את עצמנו כגברים. יש אנשים שפונים אלינו בגיל 70 ואומרים לא סיפרנו לאף אחד על הפגיעה המינית כי ברור לנו שברגע שנספר אנחנו מאבדים את מקומנו בעולם. אף אחד כבר לא יוכל לראות אותנו כגברים, יראו אותנו כקורבנות. הם לא יגידו יראו אותנו כנשים, אבל בחוויה שלהם, אם אני קורבן, אז אני משול לאישה. ואז זה אומר שאני לא ראוי, לא לאהבה ולא להערכה ולא ל... אני כלום ושום דבר. אין לי שום דבר, כי גם אין לי שפה רגשית אחרת. לא רכשתי את השפה הזאת. זו השפה שאני יודע, וברגע שאני, אין לי את נקודת ההתייחסות הזאת ואת קבוצת ההתייחסות הראשונית הזאת של גברים, אין לי מקום בעולם. ועוד לפני שאני עובר טראומה כזו או אחרת, אני חי בעצם באיזשהו סוג של דיכוי שהוא המצע לטראומה שלי. כלומר, כשאני כבר מגיע לטראומה, אין לי את הכלים להתמודד איתה, או את הכלים הטובים להתמודד איתה. רואים את זה בצבא מאוד אצלנו, שברגע שאתה בא, ואתה בא ממקום של כוח, ופתאום מפקד בא ואומר לך מה לעשות, יש פחד נורא נורא גדול, יש תחושה של חולשה, של אפסות, של אני לא הגבר שחשבתי שאני, פתאום אני מרגיש פחד, פתאום אני מרגיש אימה, פתאום אני עצוב, אולי אני בוכה בלילה במיטה, כי אני נורא מאוים מהחולשה הזאת שפוקדת אותי, שאני לא מבין מאיפה היא באה. עכשיו, הם לא יודעים להפריד בין הגבריות לבין מי שהם, זה אחד. מה שאנחנו עושים הרבה פעמים בטיפול או בקבוצות, אנחנו מנסים להפריד את זה רגע. בואו נשאיר רגע את הגבריות בצד, בואו נראה רגע איך אתם מרגישים. בואו נלמד אתכם את השפה. הרבה פעמים החוויה הזאת בסוף מאוד מאוד מזככת, כשהם פתאום רואים שהם באים לבת הזוג שלהם ואומרים לה, נפגעתי מינית, או והיא לא ישר כועסת עליהם או עוזבת את הבית, זה גילוי מרעיש עבורם, היכולת להיות גם פגיע. אני עושה קבוצה בכלא של... יכול להיות שיח של אנשים שיושבים מאסר עולם על שתי רציחות, לא על אחת, ולייבב כגברים לא ממקום קורבני. כי מקום קורבני הם יודעים הרבה פעמים אסירים להשתמש במקום הקורבני או בפגיעה המינית שהם עברו. לא, ממקום של עוצמה, ממקום של חיבור אמיתי לרגש המאוד מאוד ראשוני הזה, של האובדן, של האימה שהם חוו, של הטראומה שהם חוו.
Crying when things went poorly for me.
Yeah.
In sports, specifically hockey, was very looked down upon and
your father was
My father was front and center with that. Yes. There would be times when I would get upset and I would tear up and I would cry, and then very distinctly the start of one season I didn't have that problem anymore. I just didn't cry.
It's not a problem, Chris, it's a gift. The problem to your father.
Right.
Family pathology rolls from generation to generation like a fire in the woods, taking down everything in its path until one person in one generation has the courage to turn and face the flames.
What would happen to me then is I would get shouted down, beaten down. Wow. For my insubordination, for my insolence.
It was like that?
Yeah.
Subordination for your insolence?
Yeah, if I...
You didn't have a father, you had a sergeant.
Yeah.
What's it like to see that?
I mean, in a way, I've always known that. It's painful. I feel like not like a little nauseous just like getting close to that.
What's the emotion connected with that nausea?
I would say it's pain, anger, and shame.
Yeah, wow.
It's a pretty potent mix.
Yeah, shame about?
Shame about my self-worth. Like, what? Who am I to break the rules, or who am I to stand up for myself?
Who the fuck do you think you are?
Yeah.
Who do you think you are?
Nobody. I'm nobody. That's what I tell myself.
How long you been that?
As long as I can remember.
You're nobody.
That's right.
What's it feel like to be nobody, Chris?
It feels sucks.
Go on and let it go.
Oh, it feels so bad.
I ask most of the men I see, what kind of father did you have? What kind of father do you want to be? Will you let me help you be that man? Who says no to that? But most of us are making it up. Most of us are trying to do better than where we came from. I want to remember the youngest time that you can remember where somebody's shaming you for crying. How old are you?
5, maybe. I'm at a hockey rink.
Yeah.
I was at a game for the talented players, up and coming boys.
Good.
And I was in position to get a goal, and there was a wide open net, and the puck just slid right under my stick. I missed the shot.
Yeah.
And afterwards, all I heard was there was a yawning net. It was wide open, and you missed it.
Yeah. Who'd you hear that from?
That was my father.
Yeah.
And I was just really hurt.
Yeah. What do you want to say to him? Right now, if he were in front of you, what do you want to say to him?
Say...
Break the rule. Stand up to him.
No.
There you go. Say it like you mean it.
No.
Say it again.
No. No.
No what?
No. I can feel whatever I want to feel. Doesn't matter that I missed the shot. Doesn't matter.
Here's the revolution. You can teach a man how to love himself. You can heal the wound of disconnection. You can teach a man how to show up and be responsible for the people around him. You can educate people out of this, but it's not straightforward teaching because you have to also deal with the trauma. And now, Chris, I'd like to meet that 5-year-old. And I want you to find that 5-year-old who's living inside you. What do you feel as you look at him?
Heartbreak.
Yeah. Go on and feel it. Go on and feel it. Open the back of your throat. Keep Tell him. Tell him out loud, as I look at you, my heart is breaking.
As I look at you, my heart is breaking.
Yeah. Go on and feel it.
I know how much you're going to suffer.
Yeah.
You don't deserve it.
Yeah.
I missed you so much. And we need you. We need you here. And we want you here.
Yeah.
I want you here.
Yeah.
I want you as a part of me.
Yeah. That's what you both deserve. It's what you deserve, and it's what he deserves. One of the things I say to men across the board is, your feelings never left you. You've left them. They've been here the whole time. Just tune the dish in instead of out, and they'll be right there for you. Give men structure. Give men your conviction that they can do it, and they can do it. How you doing?
Oh, I am doing very well. I feel joy.
There you go.
I feel joy. It feels so damn good.
Yeah. Listen, you have a ton of feelings. What you have to understand, Chris, is that having those feelings breaks the rules.
Yeah.
And you have to have courage.
I do want to get everybody's number and name.
All right, we need a name circle.
Listen, I'll do this last. I want you to feel the power of the circle. I want you to feel the power of community with other men. Really community from the heart. And what miracles that can bring. Just feel it.
I think I have absolutely no issue being tender with my male friends. For me, it's the integration of also that angry part, because it's one thing to open up and to invite life in, to invite emotions in, other men, true intimacy, but it's something else to position yourself and say, stop, you know, don't cross this line. What we're going to do is to really tune into where in our lives do we experience anger. And then we will be feeling and expressing that anger. We haven't learned how to deal with anger in a natural way.
Jump a little bit.
Either the anger is too present or it's not allowed at all. I've really experienced how a destructive anger can turn into a healthy anger. I know that it is deeply empowering to be angry because there's things to be angry at.
Wenn euch einstimmt, was als erstes hochkommt, wo ihr in eurem Leben so richtig, und dann wo war diese höchste Intensität? Trust your body.
We have to own our power as men. We couldn't be men without power. And I think men get frustrated when they can't give that power, that strength in a good way to society or to their lives.
I had a terrible experience today, and it was exactly that. I was in the car with my ex-wife and my daughter. We came from the doctor, and we were not able to hold it. Just like a moment of peace for like a minute, and at the end, she stopped, like I had to stop the car. She took the baby, ran out of the car. It was horrible. It's just like so stupid. And the anger also at yourself that you allow every time the trigger.
Basically, you're victim to the feeling of you don't have a will, you don't have a say, you're not in control. What he could take out of it is that he actually can voice what he needs to say what's okay for him and what's not, instead of being just a victim to some kind of explosion and relational dynamic, but kind of like, no, he can take a stance. He can say, no, this is not the way I'm going to deal with the situation anymore. No. So a healthy sense of no, disempowerment of like, no, I really meant no. You get it?
Yes. Yeah. We have to do it like this. Okay. Go.
To at least my groups, there's lots of men coming who are really looking for the vulnerability. Vulnerability is a missing link that men need to be truly powerful. You know, if I really express what I feel and what I long for, what my needs are, like showing who I am,
you know, oftentimes people ask, when did you know Aiden? But I've learned that it's actually not the right question. It's more so, when did I understand that people weren't seeing me for who I am? I would say, you know, pretty darn young. There was an adult couple who had a couple small children, and I looked at them, I was 9. I thought, oh, I'm gonna grow up and people are going to expect me to get married and have a family. And I thought about that and I thought, yeah, I would like to have a family. I'd like to get married someday. And then an absolute immediate sinking feeling, which is I'm not the mom and the wife. I'm the dad and the husband. And that despair was because that's impossible. We have tried to define that line between genders. and we cannot do it. It doesn't exist. No matter what way we slice it, we're going to find people who embody those exceptions. If we can take a look at that binary representation and say, hey, can't we bust out the boundaries a little bit here? Can't we provide a more expansive landscape that gives us all some breathing room?
הגעתי במכון כושר, שנה שלמה, אף אחד לא החליף איתי מילה. זה לא שזרקו לי מילים רעות. אף אחד לא החליף איתי מילה במכון כושר. הייתי מגיעה לשם 6 פעמים בשבוע, כל יום. אמנם לא העזתי להתקלח שם, אבל הייתי מגיעה 6 פעמים בשבוע למכון. לאט לאט, אחרי שנה, התחילו הבנות לדבר איתי, ואז אחרי שהבנות מדברות איתי, פתאום גבר פה מעיז להגיד שלום לגברים בדרך כלל. בתחילת התהליך שלי, ממש בהתחלה, אז זה היה לי ברור אוטומטית בעבר, ואני אומר את זה בכנות מוחלטת, שאני אלך על הקיצון. החל מלעשות ניתוח תחתון של איבר מין, שזה היה ברור לי חד משמעית שזה יהיה שם, ומהר מאוד לעשות את הניתוח של החזה, ואני זוכר שכמה שרציתי את זה, וזה... מהר רציתי את הזקן, והייתי מתגלח ממש הרבה כדי שהזקן יגדל. זה היה מקום מאוד לחוץ, זה היה מקום מאוד לא בריא נפשית. לא הייתי במקום טוב בחיים שלי כשניסיתי להשיג גבריות שאפילו לא האמנתי בה. לא האמנתי לזה בכלל, כי לא האמנתי שככה גבר צריך להיות, אבל מהר מאוד היה לי חשוב להתייצב כגבר.
יש! יא!
יא!
Do you like having some of this length up here on top, or do you feel like it needs to be a little bit shorter?
I think that needs to be a little bit shorter.
Sammy's always been a really kind and sweet child, but he was always a bit awkward. Seemed kind of uncomfortable in his skin, really choosy about clothes and textures. Yeah. 2 weeks before school started, he came to us and said, I want to start school as a boy with the name Sammy.
Do they call it Children's Village?
The way he explained it was his whole life he grew up knowing there are boys and girls, but he didn't really understand the difference. It didn't have a definitive meaning until about second grade. It used to be boys and girls played soccer together. All those things were together, and then they split. So the boys went on one team, the girls went on another team. And it was at that point that he realized, like, oh, this is an actual thing where I have to define myself as one thing or another. And that's when it started to feel really wrong, and we started to experience what they called dysphoria.
שפתאום אמרתי, אוקיי, כאילו, אני נראה גבר, אני מן הסתם כנראה גבר, ולא בא לי, ממש נהניתי בתור אישה, אז כאילו, אני לא בא לי לוותר על זה. שלי. זה תואר, זה טרנס, זה המגדר. ואז כשאנשים שאלו אותי, רגע, אז אתה גבר או את האישה, אז אני טרנס. הייתי אישה 20 שנה, יש לי חזות של גבר. באמצע אני גם וגם, אבל אני לא... תרגיש הרבה יותר בנוח לעתים להיות כזאת ולעיתים להיות אחרת, אבל שתיהם זה היא, ויש אפשרות להכיל את שתיהם, גם האישה תהיה משוחררת יותר, וגם הגבר יהיה משוחרר יותר. זה יאפשר לכולנו הרבה יותר שחרור.
All righty, sir. It was getting long. What do you think?
I like it.
You like it? Nice. I think it looks really good. I think your dad's gonna like it too.
מגבר דורשים יותר. אני מרגיש שהעולם היה הרבה יותר סלחני כלפיי כשבאתי באישה. ואני לא חושב שזה טוב לנשים. זה בא ממקום שהוא שסולחים לך כי כנראה את לא יכולה, כנראה את פחות מסוגלת. ילד קטן כזה של בוא אני ארים אותך כי אין לך כוח ללכת לבד. הבנתי שזה מה שגם אני עושה לגברים אחרים. אני נמצא בדיוק באותה נקודה שמגבר הייתי מצפה להיות הגבר בבית. פתאום אנחנו מגיעים למצב, זה הרבה סטרייטים אוהבים לשאול, רגע, אז מי הגבר ומי האישה? ופתאום זה סתירת לחי, רגע, שנינו גברים. שנינו גברים, אבל אני לא מצפה ממני להתנהג כמו שאני מצפה מהגבר, שאני נמשך לגברים. ואני מצפה מהגבר להיות מה שמצפים ממני להיות כגבר, ואני מזין את אותו מעגל ציפיות לא הגיוני בעליל הזה. מה זה יעשה לי אם הגבר שלי יום אחד יבוא עם גרביונים הביתה? אני לכאורה אני אמור לקבל את זה, כי אני מבין שגברים יכולים לעשות את זה. זה אופציה שאני כאילו אומר לעצמי, לא, 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 זה מלחיץ אותי, כי אני לא רוצה שהגבר שלי יבוא עם גרביון הביתה. ואז אני אומר לעצמי, אוקיי, יש לנו עבודה לעשות.
Talks about when he wanted his mother to kiss him goodnight before he went up to bed, and she said, now come on, you're a big boy now, you're 5 years old. And he said he wasn't going to go to sleep until his mother came and kissed him goodnight. He went up to his room and he just held out until the father finally intervened and said, look, you know, he's so upset, why don't you go and spend the night in his room and help him settle down? Because the idea that the father makes the law, he can change the law, he can do whatever he wants. But the thing that I got from it is the sense that to the little boy, the father wasn't that in touch with his feelings. It was that the mother and the grandmother had been the ones who were in touch with his feelings. And for them to turn a kind of deaf ear to his feelings and to teach him that felt like a much deeper betrayal. And I've often wondered about, you know, whether or to what degree men's anger at women is for women's complicity in patriarchy.
There was a Pew Research study in 2018 that showed that although we say we value kindness and compassion, we value them more in women than we do in men. Although we say we want men to talk about their emotions and share these things, it also showed, it found that women tend not to value men who are emotional. Boys especially are not just hearing the messages we tell them, they're also seeing our behaviors, and that communicates something even more strongly. I think that one of the roles of girls and women are to kind of be more consistent in what we're saying we value in boys and men. And again, it's not about one list over another. It's not like, oh, we'll value you if you're sensitive over if you're macho, but like valuing when men show up and bring themselves into the conversation, when they show up openly and honestly. And sometimes being honest and open is going to mean that they're going to say things that we don't like. But being a good person is not about only saying things that we want them to say. It's about them being able to tell us the truth. And so I think, you know, can we handle the truth? Are we strong enough? Are we tolerant enough to really allow people to enter the conversation as they are? Because I think, unfortunately, we want to hear what we want to hear. it goes both ways. I don't know that it's only advice for women and girls. I think that's also advice for just anyone who wants to have healthy relationships, to kind of be ready to not always be told and to get exactly what we think we want. And sometimes we'll be surprised, we'll be pleasantly surprised. We'll get something more than what we were asking for or expecting.
Shared by mainstream patriarchal culture and virtually all of the so-called counterculture movements that are in existence. You want to know what it is? The value of the individual. Personal growth is personal growth. It's not relational growth. And I make a distinction between what I call personal empowerment and relational empowerment. Personal empowerment is, I was weak, now I'm strong, go screw yourself. I have found my voice, I'm gonna call it the way I see it, I don't give a good goddamn how you feel about it. Relational empowerment is, I was weak, now I'm strong, I'm bringing my full voice into this relationship. I'm gonna tell you exactly what I want from you. And I'm going to empower you to come through for me. What can I give you to help you give me what I want? How can I help? And I think being powerful, fully voiced, and in relationship breaks the back of patriarchy. Being relational is what we're born for. Being relational is how we are designed, is how we function best. It's the pearl of great price. It's the only thing that will really make us happy. As a people, we're trying to work this out. We're trying to figure out how to be fully ourselves and fully connected both at the same time. And we have no model. The traditional roles of men and women are not built for intimacy. They're built for production and consumption. The culture supports the old roles. You know, performance-based esteem and what we call attribute-based esteem, I have worth because of what I have, and what we call other-based esteem, I have worth because you think I do, my reputation. This is what our culture runs on. I like to say, if every man and woman in the country woke up tomorrow in full relational recovery, our economy would collapse. But don't worry about it. It's not going to happen.
Is within us. We're all born with a voice and we're all born with a desire to engage responsibly with other people. So basically, let's clear out the impediments because we have the human capacities that are necessary to solve the problems that we collectively face right now. And one of the things that's really getting in the way, because it's immobilizing these basic relational capacities that are integral to solving whether it's climate change or poverty or inequality or fascism, human problems.
The young people that I speak with, they're ready to really start challenging these gendered constructions. There's a huge loss when we even have these norms. Yet this idea of conformity means we're taking away from or detracting from people's uniqueness. And I think that in order for our society to thrive, we really need to value exactly all those differences and talents that people bring. I mean, what's the point of having everyone be exactly the same?
Like, we just need to make it not an anomaly and build connection, then build relationships, and then build more real, be more vulnerable with each other. And I think the more we help this new generation recognize about kindness and caring and loving, and how about those be alpha traits of humans? Not just of men. How about we just be a kind, caring, loving community where we don't judge and harm each other?
When we start poking at that agreed upon foundation of gender, then we're going to also be poking at some other foundational elements. Race comes into it immediately. So we're really disrupting some core foundational elements upon which our society is built. And that feels dangerous.